Welcome to the Land Jam Podcast, a semi-friendly discussion between two blokes on watches, cars, and everything in between. Now, here are your hosts, Tommy and Sanjeev.
Welcome to the Land Jam Podcast, episode 42, Half Man, Half Beast.
Sanj, I'm thinking, so obviously, you know, the headline here is the Omega Swatch, the Moon Swatch, the historic tie-up between Omega and its parent corporation, which which is really all about corporate synergy. And, you know, that's really the controversial watch news this week. How do you, first of all, Sanj, were you surprised by this?
I guess very, very surprised. It came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, they had an announcement. That they, you know, they had a countdown clock for a couple days, so something was coming. But I would never have guessed that this is the route they would have taken. So let me just first spit out the facts and then we can talk about it, right? So the Moon Swatch collection, the Omega X Swatch collection, is an 11 watch collection. So it's basically themed with the nine planets, the sun and the moon. Each of these 11 watches is based on the Speedmaster platform. So they're basically Speedmaster cases. They're basically proportioned exactly down to how a Speedmaster would wear on your wrist. But they're not made of steel. They're made out of something called bioceramic, which is a mix of two-thirds ceramic and one-third bio-derived plastic using the seeds of a castor plant. That's how Hodinkee is reporting it. So whatever that means. I'm curious what the material feels like. I really don't know if it's more plasticky or more ceramic-y. I really have no idea what that's supposed to mean. So, you know,
I'm just curious. I guess we just have to try it for ourselves and see the watch for ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's akin to feeling more like the ceramic Speedmasters or whether it will feel something completely different. Obviously, it can't be fully ceramic. I would assume that the cost would be much higher.
Yeah, what they're charging astronomical.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, it's size 42 millimeters, consistent with the Speedmaster professional case. Interestingly, the dial and the crown are co-branded, so they both have Omega and Swatch on them. And the subdials are different from how a Speedmaster is laid out. They're a bit more spread out. So, you know, whereas in the Speedmaster subdials, you know, I'm wearing a Speedmaster right now, 3, 6, and 9, they're closer together. In the Moon Swatch, they're a bit more spread out. Think more like Mickey Mouse, but actually, this is pretty Mickey Mouse itself, so I'm not sure. I'm not sure if that applies. What else? Interestingly, you know how there's like an Omega symbol etched on the crystal of the Speedmaster. So they actually etched. They took the effort to etch an S for Swatch, where you'd expect to see the Omega symbol on. So I thought that was a funny little callback. Powering it, of course, it is a Swatch, so it's got the Swatch quartz chronograph movement in it. It ticks. There's no sweeping. There's no mecha quartz. None of that. It's a straight ticking quartz chronograph movement. So let's get that off. You know, right off the bat. The interesting thing is they come on Apollo style Velcro straps. So that's kind of playful. Kind of again, calling back to the space program. The most interesting thing, I think what's notable and what's really driving people crazy is the price. It's priced at around $250. Look, what should we think about this, right? So, look, I'm a Speedmaster fan, right? So I don't have, you know, I have a Speedmaster and I'm not, you know, I don't think they're Speedmasters. I think it's a cartoonish Swatch take on a Speedmaster. I think it's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be light. You know, having said that, I don't see a whole lot of harm in it. To me, the standout ones are the Mission to the Moon, which is closest to the Moonwatch, the Speedmaster Professional, as we all know, and the Mars one, which I think, kind of has callbacks to the Alaska project with the Gemini capsule hands for the subdials, which I absolutely love. Having said that, you know, I think it's an interesting project. I don't know, Sanj. Where do you kind of sit on this? I feel like you have a bit more of a caustic take.
You know, when I first heard the news and read the stuff, I was like, what is this? Like, this is ridiculous, right? Mm-hmm. But then as you see how the demand for it by, you know, people who are trying to, you know, watch enthusiasts, but also people getting into the watch game. You know, this is a good avenue and a good door for them to get into it, right?
Absolutely.
So it's absolutely tempered my
good. Yeah, I know the initial text between us, you were ripping on Omega for doing this.
And I have two cents. Okay, so I'm going to break it down. Let's remove the fact that this is a Speedmaster, all right? Like, let's remove the Speedmaster aspect of this watch. For $260, you're getting a lot of, let's say, bang for the buck. You know, the straps actually look really nice, I must say. That's one thing that actually caught my eye, especially the one I like, which is the Mission to Mars.
Yeah.
I think that's a very...
You like that one too. I knew you would. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the Gemini hands. It's what it was. And the contrast of the red and white, you know, it reminds, like you just said, with the... which Speedmaster was it? The Alaska Project. Yeah.
Alaska Project. Yeah.
I think...
Yeah.
You know, you get like a lot of, you know... unique features for $250-$260, you know.
I don't think there's any harm in it. I know I feel like a lot of people are really either really into it or hate the idea and are bashing it left and right. You know, I think so. I'll tell you this, you know, there's a guy on YouTube called Watch Chris. He has his own watch channel. He went to get one, I think today or yes, I think sales started today, Sanj, or was it yesterday, Friday?
I think it was yesterday. I mean, I've seen videos swarming the Swatch boutiques.
He went to Swatch in Grand Central Terminal in New York. And I know that Swatch very well because I used to work in the building next door. It was connected to Grand Central. So when I took the train in, I would walk by that Swatch every day. It's a very small store, right? So he said that the lineup for that store to get in for the Swatch, the Moon Swatch, was about 1,500 people.
Wow.
Okay. So the Swatch store in Grand Central is on the main level. They actually had to run the line into the tunnels under Grand Central Station and basically rope off the area so people could wait to get in to get the watch. And
that's
he
incredible.
Said that they had about 100 pieces and the first 100 got in and that was it.
Why bother waiting? Like, if
well, they didn't know, right? Yeah. Until they opened the store, then they told people there's only 100, which I think was probably pretty bad. Like, you know, maybe don't have people wait for hours on end to just disappoint them. But whatever. The interesting thing is Swatch is, it's not a limited edition. It's not numbered. It'll eventually be available online. So the people who are choosing to wait are choosing to wait, you know, which I like. Yeah.
This was unexpected, unprecedented demand.
Unprecedented. But you know what? I think the interesting thing here is more the economic argument here is there's so many people, a couple things. Like you said, I think it's great for the brand. And, you know, it's kind of counterintuitive because, you know, some people will say you're cheapening Omega, you're cheapening the Moonwatch, you're letting people wear basically knockoffs and, you know, you're kind of hurting the brand. But if you think about it, look, the Speedmaster Professional, the new one goes for about $6,000.
Okay? Exactly.
There are most people in America, in the world, are never going to buy that Speedmaster Professional. It is just not going to happen. Okay. It's way out of people's league. It's just absurd. So, you know, you're basically self-selecting as is. But if you reach out to a different crowd of people who are younger, maybe, who are kids, you know, I could imagine some, you know, some dad buying this watch for, you know, his son coming out of high school or whatever, you know, the kid could be inspired, you know, and he's got a feel for the Speedmaster. He's now aware of the brand. He gets kind of the design and he has something to aspire to when he becomes 30 or 35. He's like, you know what, I'm going to start saving up for that Speedy Pro. So I think there's kind of an evil genius to this. You know, I think it's actually pretty smart. It's counterintuitive to what one would think. I do think that, yeah, I inherent in this is that, hey, you know, you're getting a $250 facsimile of a Speedmaster. Who wouldn't want one? Right.
Yeah. I mean, this watch is for the blue collar, blue jeans,
or kids or casual collectors or sneaker heads like that. You know how like sneaker culture, like people just go nuts and wait outside stores for releases. Like I really feel that was kind of similar vibe here. I can't imagine a lot of the people at online at Grand Central Terminal were like certified watch heads, you know, like, you know, watch nerds like us necessarily who would do it. I think there are more people that are like kind of into cool gear, you know, who would also wait in line for hats or sneakers or whatever. So, and look, it's an approachable thing. Like, you know, I've even thought about it. I'm like, hey, you know, actually that one, you know, a couple of these look pretty nice. I might even just throw a punt just for fun. So yeah, I think overall, I think it's genius marketing. I think it's a really interesting take that they've done.
Yeah.
I can't think of another tie up like this.
Yeah. I mean, I'm surprised that you actually wanted to buy after having owned a Speedmaster Professional.
I like the Mars one. Yeah. I mean, I how am I going to get an Alaska project? I'm never going to get an Alaska project.
You had the Speedy Auto and you were complaining about it's not the Speedmaster Professional and you swapped it for a Professional.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah.
But and then I also want an Alaska project. You want a Speedmaster Moonswatch.
Well, you see, that's the genius of the brand, right? It's the genius of the design because it's faithful enough that you can get some of that feel from the watch, even though it's not at all a Speedmaster Professional. It doesn't really purport it to be. I wouldn't be offended if some kid had a Moonswatch on. I don't think he'd be wearing a fake or anything like that. Generally, I'm against gatekeeping, and I think that's really stupid when people do that. I think this is a hobby that should be wider, and more people should get into it. And I don't think it should just be for, like, you know, rich old dudes. So I'm all for it.
Yeah, I mean, it should not just be for, you know, people who own Speedmasters, you know, Zins.
Listen, I think of myself as that kid getting the Moonswatch and then multiple 20 Seikos. Years later buying the Moonwatch.
And, you know, many other Swiss watches in the collection, you know.
You can't win. You know, you can't win. You can't win.
Okay, but, now for me to rip on this co-branding thing. Like, to me, like, I think it's a good, great marketing scheme, but, like, it also dilutes the brand of the Speedmaster in a sense.
See, I disagree with you, but go on.
No, like, you know, like, Omega's cultivated this thing that they're a high-end Swiss watchmaker, right?
They've
got great lengths and everything, and then they dropped this, you know, like.
But, you know, that why can really.
Having the Speedmaster, it's like, for example, like it's like Bentley putting their name on a Volkswagen.
I think the way you should think about it, Sanj, is Swatch has a lot of co-branding, right? Like Swatch has, let's just say they have an NBA line where you can get a Chicago Bulls Swatch, or you can get a Ford Automotive Swatch, or whatever. That's kind of how you should think about it. This is not something that's an Omega watch. It's but a Swatch watch with Omega.
That brand.
I agree. But it's really, you know, it's like having a Swatch with Ford Automotive written on it. It's not a Ford, right? Even though it has Ford written on it. It's not an Omega because it has Omega written on it. It's a Swatch take on an Omega watch, okay, or an Omega product. That's kind of how one should think about it.
I know, but like, you know, if you considered how the history of Omega and how they, you know, portrayed themselves as a Rolex competitor.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't think it's an Omega mug. It's not an Omega. That's why you shouldn't think of it that way.
But then shouldn't it be Swatch cross Omega instead of Omega cross Swatch? I mean, the Omega name is right there.
I agree.
Big letter.
I don't know if one should be first before the other. I mean, look, it has. It's not like any Omega watch where it uses that movement or anything like that. You know, I think it's just a pure branding, co-branding that Swatch does with any number of brands. It just happens to be one of their sub-brands, Swatch Group sub-brands, and another watch company.
The Swatch Moonswatch, you know, I'm like, okay, cool. You know, and maybe throw in an Omega collab in somewhere. But like, it's like, this is Omega first then Swatch to me. Where it should be the opposite.
Well, yeah, but you know, what are we arguing here? One name should be in front of the other.
Like, you know, they're marketing it as an Omega watch to me first.
That's why people want it, though, Sanj, right?
I guess it's.
But like, I don't think it's really taking away. You know, it's Yeah, I see what you're saying, but like I really don't see it as an Omega, so I don't really, I'm not too concerned about it, you know. I don't see it as a ding against Omega the brand.
I mean, this I do more of I do know what you mean. Swatch themselves than Omega, right?
That's how I see it, and Omega characterized it as this is a thank you to Swatch Group for rescuing the brand, you know, before it went under during the quartz
crisis. Written by some MBA people just to sell.
I'm sure it is, but you know, that's the story. So you know, story, whatever. Story. It doesn't offend me. I think it's great to have younger people and kind of, you know, casual watch collectors into the brand, into the hobby.
I 100% agree. That's I think, you know, like you're not going to get a, you know, kids won't get an Omega Speedmaster Pro when they graduate high school unless, you know, they live in Naples or something. But you know, this is
why Naples.
I don't know. I visited Naples and every other car was a Bentley, so I'm just assuming it's for that area. You know, the rich.
were they part of La Cosa Nostra or something? Or what?
No, it's a very very upscale area. I mean, it's incredible.
Interesting. Okay.
All right. Yeah. Anyways, going back to this.
Yeah.
I do like their, you know, the execution of it, but like it to me it does dilute a little bit. Like it's I don't know. But I give credit for the demand. Like I think this has caught everyone by surprise.
I don't think this has any. Listen, I don't think any Omega collector or, you know, Omega head is going to consider this an Omega watch. So I'm not sure that there's any real negative here. You know, I think it's good marketing.
I can see, you know, like you said, you want to get this, right? The mission to Mars.
I mean, playfully, I'm not actually going to get one. I really. Like I said, I would never wear it. I mean, why would I wear that over my Speedmaster? Right?
Why not?
Because I want a full mechanical chronograph on my wrist. Because I'm a weirdo and I don't like ticking quartz watches. That's just how I am.
Don't you have a Flightmaster from Citizen?
That's already been gifted away.
Wow.
It's already been given away. It's a Nighthawk. We've talked about this.
Nighthawk. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I know we talked about it, but do I remember? No.
No. You've been swinging at the bottle too long. That's what's going on with you. Right?
Hey, you bought it.
Yeah, it's a great watch. There's nothing wrong with it. But, you know, tastes change. You know, things change.
And here you are trying to market yourself as blue collar, blue jeans.
I'm saying I'm okay with it.
But anyway, you will get one.
I don't need one. I don't think I'd ever wear one over someone else, something else that I would have, you know? So that's the problem. It's not, there's nothing wrong with it. I think it looks cool. I think that all the Omega callbacks are awesome. I love that there's callbacks to other watches. There's also an Ultraman entry into the collection, which I think is really cool. Obviously, the Mission to Moon is the one I would get, but it would be nearly identical to the Speedmaster Professional.
Yeah, exactly. Again, it's black.
There's no reason. Yeah. So, you know.
Why am I not surprised?
You shouldn't be surprised. But that's what I'm saying. That's why I probably wouldn't, because why would I? I already have one for the most part. So,
you know what, Tommy? I'm just going to get one for you just because.
You should. Thank you. I appreciate that. I do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want you to wear it every day.
I can't make any promises. Maybe the Velcro strap would be fun. You know, I would grab one of those.
I must say that they, you know, for $260, the strap actually looks
nice, right?
Nicely executed. Like I have to give them credit. Like even if it's a pleather, which I honestly would prefer, it looks really well done.
Yeah, yeah, and the packaging and everything is unique for each model. They did a very good job. You know, it takes a huge corporation to put something like that together and keep it at that price. You know, I do think that, so yeah, basically, you know, the initial shipments sold out everywhere. There are people on eBay trying to flip them for about $3,000, which is insane.
Why am I not surprised?
Yeah, if any listener here buys one of these watches for $3,000,
I don't know what to tell you. And slap you.
Yeah, I will take a first class flight to come slap you.
You know, you're not marketing yourself as a blue collar, blue jeans. I mean, you say first class flight in your
I'll slap it. I'll take business class. So, Yeah, I mean, these are not limited edition watches, okay? So Swatch will restock, and they're going to go eventually online, so you don't have to go to an actual Swatch store. There actually isn't one in Boston, which is interesting. I actually looked it up just for giggles, as far as I know. Yeah, so like there's no reason to. Just be patient a couple weeks, and it'll come up on the Swatch site, and you can just jump in line there. So it's really silly. You know, you have all the usual nonsense when, you know, there's a limited number and people are sitting in line and trying to make a quick buck. But yeah, look, you know, if you're a young guy or if you are a casual watch person, there's no harm in it. I think, you know, grab a feel for the Speedmaster. I think it's an awesome watch. Obviously, we talk a lot about it, so I don't blame people for being excited.
You know what? I wonder, you know, this is just a conspiracy, but I wonder if... Swatch looked at how Seiko took the Seiko 5KX and did some, you know, creative interpretations of it, you know, like the Street Fighter series, if I'm not mistaken, and the different colors. I wonder if there's, you know, they saw that and decided to do something like that.
Interesting take. I mean, look, I think all these watches, you know, a lot of watch companies are looking at the lower end of the segment, you know, so where you have the so-called $200, you know, fashion watch kind of thing where
right.
you're competing against Daniel Wellington, all those guys, and seeing kind of an opportunity there, right? So, you know, that's always there. But like I said, you know, Swatches aren't expensive to begin with. And this is a Swatch. It's not an Omega. So that's... I don't think that that's necessarily, you know, Omega's not counting on this as some future strategy for itself. I think that's kind of crazy. I think this is a one-off, you know, at most. They're not going to do this again. But I think it's done its purpose, right? You've got, now we have people talking Swatch and Omega, okay? And
yeah, I mean, they'll come to find out that Swatch does own Omega, you know?
Yeah, and listen, if you've got the money, you go and buy yourself a Moon Swatch. And if you got even more money, you can go and buy the real Moonwatch. And there's nothing wrong with either, okay? So I think it's kind of a win-win here. I don't think anyone, you know, wearing a Speedmaster professional is going to be like, ick, some kid is going to have a Moonswatch. And they're going to think, I have a Moonswatch, and this is not going to work. You know, I don't think that there's any risk of that. So,
and, you know, to be fair, like, there's some watches, like the Alaskan Project, that's, you're never going to...
Never
get one of those. Those are hard to get, and they're really
not going
to
happen. Yeah, exactly. No. So, you know, forget it. Have a little fun. You know, people stop gatekeeping and freaking out. I think it's really silly. So that's my two cents. Have fun.
Yeah. Like I said, I have two sides to the story. Would I get one? Probably not. Like, just because
only because myself. you wouldn't choose to have a quartz chronograph, and you'd find that to be kind of weird.
Yeah. Right? I mean, not just that, I don't see myself having much, you know, risk time with that, with these watches. You know, I would just go ahead and save up slowly for the professional. And
sweet boy. All right, good.
Okay, so there's 11 watches. Okay, so you like the Mission to Moon, the Mission to Mars. Like, say, what would be your top three?
Those are two. I would say the other one would be probably the Neptune. Is that the blue one?
The Neptune. Yes, that is the blue one. Ooh, that's a striking blue.
Yeah, it's a darker blue. There's a Tiffany blue Uranus. So there's that. But no, I would probably do Neptune. Actually, Mercury is also very cool too.
Yeah, I was thinking
subtle green. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I can see the Tiffany blue one being really popular because that's like the new hot color in the high-end watch game, you know, with the Patek Nautilus.
So apparently people are, some of the last ones to sell are the pink and the blue.
Oh, really?
Swatches. That's my understanding. The pink one also, interestingly, has like kind of like gems around the subdials. So I think they're kind of automatically geared there toward the female audience. So, you know, I don't know what
that one looks a little cheesy.
Yeah, the Jupiter one actually looks pretty cool, Sanj, because that has kind of the Ultraman look to it, the orange hands.
You know what? I might swap out the the Mercury for the Jupiter. I think the Ultraman hands. I always loved the Ultraman hands.
You are so easily led astray. So easily manipulated.
That's right.
That's it. Just a lemon.
Here, you just take my credit card. Just shut up and take my money.
I mean, look, it's a fun kind of watch. It's not expensive, you know.
No, I mean, for the price point,
there's no harm in it. Go get one. It's really good. There's no harm in it. Yeah. You know, people wigging out and getting mad online. It's like, freaking get a life. Jesus Christ. Well, anyway.
You've been spending a lot of time on the forums reading about this release.
Who, me or you?
No, you. I'm just hearing it from you.
No, I mean, at first I was taken aback by it. And I was like, how do I feel? But, you know, there's no harm in it. But people who take this to heart and like, are so upset and going and dropping nasty comments. It's like, come on, like
they're ditching Omega for Rolex. You know, that's
how it is. Go for it. Mortgage the house. You can do this. Right? All right, Sam. So that's one Speedmaster release. What other Speedmaster release can we talk about? Oh yeah, the 57. What's going on there?
Yeah. All right. So on the other end of the spectrum of the Speedmaster game, Omega updated the Speedmaster 57. So this watch is something that I've always been attracted to. I think in our first ever episode, when we talked about watches that we liked at the time, I remember saying Speedmaster 57. So it's kind of cool to see the Speedmaster 57 updated, and
It's been the market for about 10 years, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's inspired by the, I believe, the CK 21915.
2915,
so,
okay.
Yeah, so like this is the pre-Moonwatch era of the Speedmaster, right?
This is the pure racing Speedmaster.
Yeah, would I dare to say that it was like very, you know, closer in aesthetic to like, say, the Ed White Speedmaster? Am I wrong in saying that? Like, it's got dual registers in this particular model, but I think the Ed White is, you know, the precursor to what the real Moonwatch was, right?
Yeah. I mean, the Ed White was, you know, actually taking the space. So,
right.
I mean, even the CK 2915 is a traditional 3 sub-dial Speedmaster, just so you know.
Yeah.
Right. So it's really the hands and the rest of the design that they've said is inspiring the 57. The 57 being just 2 sub-dials is, yeah, not exactly a 1-to-1 to the 2915, just to be, you know, clear to people.
Exactly. So what they did actually, so Omega did a few things. The first thing they did was they adjusted the case size. They actually made it smaller. Hmm. So they went from 41.5, I think, to 40.5. But the big one was the case thickness. It was originally, I think, just the hair was 16 millimeters. They dropped it to 12.99, so essentially 13 millimeters, which is huge.
And how did they achieve this, Ange? What's the big change?
They changed the movement. They upgraded the movement. So they went to a hand-wound caliber 9906. The previous caliber was 9300. It's a master chronometer and 60-hour power reserve. And it's similar to that of one of the other Speedmasters. I think they call it the Speedmaster Chronoscope.
Interesting. Okay, got it.
The other thing they've done is they released the Speedmaster 57 in 4 different flavors, per se, and, you know, 4 different dials. So you have the Sunburst Blue, Burgundy Red, and Green, and the Matte Black. So the Sunburst Blue, the Burgundy Red, and the Green, they have applied rhodium markers with the applied logo.
Interesting. Okay.
The Matte Black with the Fotina is actually a sandwich dial.
Oh, okay.
So if you look at the article that we were referencing from Fertello Watches.
Yeah.
So this, if you look at it closely at the matte dial, you do see where the marker, 5-minute markers are. It's actually
it's see through to the bottom. Okay.
Yes, and they have the loom at the back. So, gotcha. Pretty interesting take. Very similar to that of, I think, with their most recent Seamaster updates. Wasn't that also a bit of a sandwich dial as well? I think it was the Seamaster 300 most recently.
I'm going to defer to you, Sanj. It doesn't ring a bell necessarily. Interesting. Okay, cool. So I guess the headline is the smaller case and smaller thickness is because of the change from automatic to a manual wind movement. And because yes. you don't have the rotor, you can go a little bit thinner and smaller.
Right. The aesthetics is more or less the same as the previous Speedmaster 57 or the previous iteration per se. So you have the two subdial registers at the 3 and the 9 o'clock and the date window at the 6 o'clock. And yeah. you still have the broad arrow hands.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a bit more, let's say, a bit more fitting to your wrist with the dimensions and reduction in dimensions. So you can probably, you know, not only just, you can probably wear this in a, like a formal affair because it's thinner.
I mean, I wear a Speedmaster with a suit, so it's not that big of a deal.
No, but Speedy like, Pro, you know, but yeah. Man, this was a much, yeah. probably a thicker watch than the Speedmaster Pro.
True, right? true.
So yeah. now, you know, you can kind of probably wear this with in more environments. And yeah, you know, like you're not going to like it. It does have a case back, you know, exhibition case back.
Got it.
But, you know, I think it's a very attractive watch. I still think it is. So it comes in, you know, four different colors and then you can get it with a matching strap or a bracelet. And the price is the other end of the moon swatch. So this goes for the 8,000 francs for the bracelet or 7,700 for the leather strap. And the one thing that they also did with the bracelet is they added micro adjustment.
Yeah.
So the clasp has been upgraded too. So a bit more comfort per se.
Got it.
So
I like it. You know, this line isn't my favorite. You know, I just love the professional. So, but you know, I kind of get the appeal.
I always, the weird thing is I actually would pick the matte black with the Fortina markers. I think it's kind of works for me actually.
Whatever floats your boat, brother. Whatever
floats your that boat. Means that Sanji picked the worst one out of the four.
I would have picked the matte black. I mean, no surprise there. I'm not, you know, the sandwich dial, sometimes I'm in the mood for sandwiches. It's not right now. Not right here. So
when were you in the mood for a sandwich dial?
I don't know. Sometimes I find them to be a bit off-putting.
Is it just like the depth it creates? Like it looks like...
No, I think depth in a dial is interesting and attractive. I don't know. Sometimes I'm just not feeling it. I something seems just visually off to me. I can't describe it. It breaks up the dial too much for me. I don't know what it is, but you know, that's just not for me. I would just take the black, matte black.
You're always a hard one to please, Tommy. Always straight edge.
Hey, when it comes to Speedmasters, I have very strong opinions.
Right? Very strong.
Except opinion. For the Moonswatch. Go get one. Everyone should get one. Yeah, very good. All right, Sanj. All right.
So yeah, very no, good. I mean, this is, you know, the other end of the spectrum. I think this is where, like, the hardcore Omega fans will be like, oh yeah, this should be like this instead of the Moonswatch, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you've got 6,000 Swiss francs or 8,000 Swiss francs or whatever it is, yeah, you can buy whatever you want, okay?
I mean, it is
bonus. They're happy to sell you whatever you want, huh?
It is bonus season at Wall Street.
Okay, well.
Go get one.
Thank you, Sanj. Yes, I don't think so, but sure. All right, so the last Speedmaster-related article I have today is not a Speedmaster at all. All right. This is the Messina Lab Geometer. And if you are a Speedmaster head like I am, the word geometer should be, your ears should have perked up. Because, you know, Speedy collectors know that about 3 years before the modern Speedmaster was released in 1957, a nearly identical watch was produced by a company called Rodania. And it was the Rodania Geometer. If you look at a Rodania Geometer, and you know, you Google this, you're going to see a lot of the design cues. I mean, almost one to one to the traditional Omega Speedmaster. I'm going to look it up right now and point this out to you. This is, you know,
no, I think we actually did talk about this.
We've covered this.
Yes, we have covered this.
Yeah. Everything from the subdial layout to the way the actual minutes are hashed out. To the two dots at 12, everything, it's one to one. It's almost like you know, if you were around in 1957 and you saw an Omega Speedmaster, you wouldn't say, oh, what a cool original design. If you knew what you were talking about, you say, that's a Rodanio Geometer. So,
but you was know, this it's based on like the specifications, but release,
no, Speedmaster was around before NASA.
No, I get that, but like for the Moonwatch, like came with the same aesthetic and then followed by Omega, you know.
Rodanio produced a racing watch.
Okay.
That's it. And Omega produced a racing watch. That's it. They didn't produce anything in NASA specifications when they made
the so 1957 Speedmaster. They just made the most identical. And
I'm not going to call it coincidence. You can call it whatever you want. Right? I'm just saying that when people complain about, oh, you designed so-and-so, copied this from so-and-so, everyone copies from everybody, okay? We just
I guess,
the other way. Yeah.
It's basically everyone has the same aesthetic.
Watch. Yeah, I mean, some of that is functional, but some of that is also, this is what a dive watch looks like to most people. But right. I mean, when you look at the Rodanio Geometer and the Omega Speedmaster, it's more than just, it's a functional chronograph, and this is why it looks that way, to somebody quite literally may have traced on a piece of paper what one watch looked like and just copied it. But I'm not going to say that. You know, you take a look and you decide. The interesting thing is, obviously, this is now brought back into the market. William Messina, you know, he's a guy that has a bunch of brands already. You may be familiar with Unimatic, Ming. He has a design lab called Messina Labs. You know, so they're basically the design house behind these separate brands. He actually brought up something just for friends and family. So if you bought a watch from him, you'd be on his email list for this friends and family invite. And the invite was for the Geometer. He's only making 99. So it's a very small audience. He's charging about $34.95. Powered with the Sellita SW510 Elleboro manual winding movement. And that's it. I mean, it's very much a Rodanio Geometer. It's not branded Rodanio. It's branded, Messina. But you know, he doesn't hide the fact that it's harkening back to the Rodanio Geometer. In fact, you know, this is in the Fratello article. He says, "Quote: Rodanio is very aware of this project, and the fact that they did not want to participate is understandable. They are not selling watches at this price point and this level of watchmaking with a Swiss-made label." Unquote. That's kind of how Messina explained how he was able to get away with it. So I think it's a very interesting release. Obviously at 99, it sold out. So it's old news already. But I think that this is also a Speedmaster-related story, even though it's not a direct Speedmaster-related story. I think that the mystique of the watch is so much that even a watch that looks like the Speedmaster... Okay, not branded the Speedmaster. There's a cult following, and enough of a cult following to make a re-release / homage watch to it. What do you think, Sench?
Same thing. Like, put it like this is like the Seiko diehards who want a King Seiko because it's got King Seiko right. If you're a diehard Omega Moonwatch Speedmaster fan. The money. You probably want to buy this just because you want to keep it. And, you know,
yeah, I mean,
collection.
There is a healthy price to get a Rodanio Geometer, like an original. Like, you know,
yeah.
It's like in the tens of thousands of dollars. They're very rare, right? So, and people in the know are aware of the history and the time between the two watches. So, this is kind of like how I justified, when people... get homage watches for like, you know, Daytonas or whatever. It's like, you know, you're never going to get a Paul Newman Daytona. The prices are ridiculous. There's no one's going to say you're faking it. You want to wear it and get a feel for the watch. There's no harm in it. You know, I'm okay with that. And that's how I kind of feel about the Messina Lab. I think it's executed really, really well. He's done it with a high level of competence. He's put in a proper mechanical movement in there. I think it's really attractive. I really hope one day I run into somebody.
It looks exactly like a Speedmaster.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I think it's so impressive.
It's like, nope. It's very similar to the watch I already own and love and adore.
So there's that.
I mean, like, yeah, this to me is like a King Seiko kind of thing. Like, I would I buy it? No. But, you know, to the diehard fans, sure. I can see that happening.
Well, let me ask you this. Would you get an original Redania geometer?
No, I'll just get an Omega Speedmaster and be happy with
it. Okay, that's fair. All right, as long as you're going to get the Speedmaster Pro, I'm fine with that. Moving on to Internet of Poo, which is a new segment that we're going to have on the podcast. Basically, internet fails, you know, forced digitization, just terrible ideas that are coming down the pike. And this week I've got a real cracker. This is an article from CNN saying Walgreens replaced some fridge doors with screens and some shoppers absolutely hate it. So what they're doing is for freezer doors at certain Walgreens, they've taken the clear fridge door and replaced it with a screen and forcing you to watch ads before it tells you what's behind the door.
Why?
Why? Because it's another revenue stream. You can force people to watch ads.
Yeah, if I'm forced to do this, I'm just going to go to CVS.
Exactly.
Which is another pharmacy to our, you know.
Well, I mean, listen, if Walgreens is going to do it, you better bet CVS is going to do it next. But it's a technology developed by a company called Cooler Screens. They use a system of motion sensors and cameras to display what's inside the doors, as well as product information, prices, deals, and paid advertisements. And this is someone who was quoted on Twitter. Quote, the digital cooler screens at Walgreens made me watch an ad before it allowed me to know which door held the frozen pizzas, unquote. So this is the nightmare idea that's coming, forcing you to watch ads before you can grab your Coke. So
you know what? I could see one tiny bit of marketing. Like, for example, like going back to like frozen foods, like say you're going to select something like meatballs, for example, frozen meatballs, right? You know, maybe it could display a recipe of, you know, that might pique your interest, how to cook these meatballs with, you know, something like that.
And
then add.
Who's going to pay for that, Sanj? Right? The money is in pushing ads for you to buy things, not, you know, here's an interesting recipe. No. Unless it's to force you to watch that recipe before you even get to find out what's behind the door, right? I mean, I don't know. Like, this is terrible. I hate this idea. No one can talk me out of these ideas. Yeah, it's awful. So, yep, there's the future, folks. Watch an ad before you can buy your whatever, your meatballs. All right, Sanj, what do you got?
This whole cooler screens is balls.
Which one has it? I gotta watch 10 ads before I can figure out what's in the cooler.
Oh gosh,
it's insane. Yeah, what do you got, Sanj? What's next?
Okay, the one I'm gonna be talking as so as you know that you know fuel prices have gone up, and especially in places like California, where it's over, you know, even up to $7 a gallon. So there is a solution for all of this with several of the Californian drivers out there, and which is go down to Mexico and fill up your tank of gas. And it's, you know, a significant savings of as much as $2 per gallon.
That's not nothing. I don't know if this is the Internet of Poo story necessarily. This is more like a closing notes. This is more like closing notes.
Yes.
It's interesting. $2 a gallon cheaper. That's not a joke.
No. So the Mexican government has, you know, subsidized the price of fuel for its citizens.
I see.
So now they're getting American residents coming down to fill up their tank of gas car.
That's interesting. Americans go down for health care. Now they're going down for gas. Something's going right in Mexico.
Maybe they'll go to the pharmacy and get like their soda. You know, they don't have to see an ad.
They don't have to sit through an ad. Oh God, maybe I'll move to Mexico. Forget it. Yeah.
Well, you made a couple of trips. quite a while ago, Tulum, and you absolutely
enjoyed it. I went to Tulum the month of the COVID shutdown. It was quite literally the last trip we took. So
you wanted to escape completely, you know, not even just get a tank of gas.
No, we downplayed the whole thing. There was the news articles about how COVID was going to be a thing, and we both laughed and said, I don't think so. And then we came back and everything shut down. So, yeah, that was the last trip we took. It was fun. It was awesome. So.
No, but what I was trying to say is you actually had a great time there, you know.
I had a fantastic time there.
Yeah,
I recommend everyone to go to Mexico. Yeah. Sanj, don't push me too hard, brother. I'll be happy to go. All right?
Yeah, so. Get a moon swatch. Go to Mexico.
That's right. All right, Sanj, what's next? Is this an internet-related story, Sanj?
This is not an internet-related story.
This is closing notes, then. All right.
Closing notes.
I am going to really enforce this by category. All right, so what do you got?
Okay, so this is... So GM is... models, you know, they're going to release them and it's going to be one by one, and it's going to come quick and it's going to come fast and plenty. The one they started releasing was the new Hummer EV. I don't know if you ever see one on the road. Like, this is, you know,
definitely haven't.
So this is out there. This is going to be related to some of the discussions Tommy and I have had on the side about how enormously large pickup trucks have become.
Yeah, it's insane. Yeah.
Okay, so if you see to witness the size of that thing, as the name implies, it is an completely electric vehicle. It's a masterpiece of engineering, the things that they've put into it. However, it does have several downsides. One being the weight of the vehicle.
Oh God!
It's over 9,000 pounds. And check this one out. The batteries alone weigh more than a Honda Civic, hence the title.
Oh my God.
It's insane.
That's insane.
So there are some non-exhaust emissions related impacts, you know, from tires, from brakes, that could be emitting a lot greater than, let's say, an IC engine counterpart, if there was ever an IC engine counterpart for the Hummer, in its current form. I mean, I'm not talking about the Hummer H2 or the previous Hummer H1, but yeah, it's you know, they go to great lengths making a very capable EV product, but it's so large and it's 9,000 pounds, which is incredible. I've seen some on the road, and
I've never seen one. So I know Doug DeMuro did a pretty famous video called "The Hummer H2 is the most embarrassing vehicle you can buy today." It's on YouTube. You should watch it. And I feel like that hasn't changed with the Hummer EV, and I'll just leave it at that.
That's honestly what it's marketed as.
Definitely a lifestyle vehicle. Yes. I don't want to insult people, but yeah, it's insane. I don't know what kind of people buy this. But you know, salute. If it makes you happy, go for it.
Yep.
At least it's electric, I guess.
If I ever win the mega
I don't want it.
Lottery.
I don't want it. Please don't.
I'm getting you this, and when you open the moon swatch for you.
I'll take the moon swatch and I'll junk the car. How does that sound?
Actually, there's a lot of lunar themed Easter eggs in this actually Hummer EV. It's actually quite interesting. Because you know history with the lunar rover, right? So they're just using that as a marketing thing.
But what does it have to do with the Hummer?
I have no idea. Go ask.
Hummer wasn't even a GM product to begin with, right? It was American General, right?
Yes, it was.
They purchased that company. So this really has nothing to do with the moon landing or the moon program at all.
Just like how there's nothing to do with the Swatch moons. like, this is literally the same guy.
This is the same thing.
This is the same thing.
Well, I'll tell you what, you're much better off getting a Moonswatch than this Hummer EV. So, you know, go for it.
Gargantuan. I have seen them on the road.
It's obscene. Yeah, it's too much. This is too much.
But, I mean, and like I said, I don't want to discount the many folks who have worked on this program that they've done. Some of the cool features there are, like, say, the crawl and some of the software bits that they're done. It's actually really, really incredible.
Do they also have fake vents and fake hooks like the Hummer H2 had?
I think this is all, I mean, I could be wrong, but I think this is a legit product in that sense.
There aren't fake hooks for a helicopter dropping the Hummer EV like the Hummer H2 had.
I don't know.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I'm trying to remember.
So the Hummer H1, right, the military Hummer, had these hooks that you would basically run cables on. So you could take a helicopter. Helicopter can lift a Hummer and then bring it to the battlefield, and you'd cut, you know, you'd basically unhook the thing and you'd drive it off. So obviously H1 was built with that, okay? The H2 was not built with that. So what they did was they just put some plastic or some superfluous hooks to simulate the look of this helicopter dropped Hummer.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yes.
They look like little hooks, yeah. If for the listeners who don't know what I'm talking about, just Google Hummer hooks and you'll see the H1 had the real hooks and the H2 had these fake hooks. So yeah, hopefully the EV is in better shape than the H2 was when that program ended. I'm cracking up just thinking about it. If you haven't seen the Doug DeMuro video on the Hummer H2, do yourself a favor. Go boot that up on YouTube.
But yeah, that's my Mega Millions jackpot gift to you, Tommy.
Please don't keep it. Keep the money. Keep the money. Put it in a 401k. You're better off, right?
I have so much millions to blow. Like, you know, these little gifts to you will be well worth it. Just to see your reaction.
No, I'll pass.
You probably won't be able to drive through the streets of Boston with this.
I'd be too embarrassed. I can't do it. All right, last article, last thing we wanted to talk about was Streaming Gold. It's a Wendover Productions video. It's a great channel on aviation, logistics, how airlines work. This one's a bit more topical. It's called The Failed Logistics of Russia's Invasion of Ukraine. He kind of takes a kind of deep dive into what went wrong for the Russians. Interesting things on train schedules, basically their trucks and logistics program. It's really interesting. It really goes into detail and explains kind of the limitations and explains why things have kind of unfolded the way they have. So I think it's pretty informative. Definitely go check that out. Wendover is a great channel too. So if you haven't subscribed, definitely subscribe.
They touch on a lot of things, you know, a bit on the logistics and economics and they break it down very graphically.
Which he does a very good job.
Yeah.
All right, Sanj, this was a crackerjack episode. I think we covered a heck of a lot this time.
Well, mainly on moonwatches and moonwatch wannabes and moonwatch and watches that look like moonwatches or vice versa.
This is very moonwatch heavy. Okay, we'll see. Let's see. Maybe there'll be another Omega. Maybe there'll be a Seamaster swatch.
Sea swatch.
Tie in next. Who knows? You know, this could be a running thing.
Think like Swatch would ever partner up with one of their other brands? Like, is Blanc? No, Blanca is not part of Swatch, is it?
I haven't thought about it. Aren't they LVMH, or am I wrong about that?
I think they may be LVMH.
Sanj, you say these things, and we then are forced to verify it.
Oh, so. No. Blancpain is part of Swatch, but there's also Breguet. I think Breguet is like the highest.
Yeah, Blancpain is Swatch Group, correct.
Yes. So do you think, you know, Swatch, which is on the lowest end of the pyramid, would team up with Breguet on the highest end of the pyramid?
Well, do you think there's going to be 1,500 people sitting in Grand Central Terminal for a Breguet or a Blancpain?
maybe a Swatch Cross Brigade Type 20.
You think so? I mean, that's an honest question.
No, I don't think so. I think it works with Omega because of the fact that they marketed it around the Moonwatch.
Of course. It's an icon. And Omega itself is a big enough brand. I mean, people know Omega. I'm not sure
you could throw
a rock at Grand Central Terminal. I don't think you'll hit someone who knows anything about Blanc Pont.
True. And I give you that. But do people know Omega in the current climate due to the Moonwatch or due to the fact that James Bond wears one?
Both of the above.
But I think Bond has had a huge influence, you know?
Oh, for sure. I mean, getting the Bond watch from Rolex to Omega was huge for the company.
Yeah.
That started that whole Seamaster line, that Pierce Brosnan's, you know, that skeletonized hands Seamaster. That's still going strong, okay? That they're still making releases, you know, today. It's almost 30 years later. So, it's a fair point. But look,
what I'm trying to say is that, you know, the Moonwatch is a historical watch. It's very well documented. But I think from a marketing perspective for Omega, the Seamaster has a greater impact. Because of Bond. That's my opinion.
I don't know if that's true. I still think that... I don't know. It might be a toss-up. It might be an interesting question. I'm not sure.
You know, like, you can think about it. Like, for example, you know, when you were young and you had an N64 and you had a GoldenEye 64.
Sure, it's true. You did see a Seamaster every time.
You did see a Seamaster in that, right? And only when you got into the watch game, you're like, you know what? The Moonwatch.
Well, nah. I mean, I think I was aware. I think I was aware before I became a watchhead what the Moonwatch was.
Really?
I don't think so. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be able to tell you what year and what model and Ed White and what. I wouldn't be able to do that, but I could tell you what a Moonwatch was. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, casually, but I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think a lot of people lining up at Grand Central Terminal are casual watch fans and casually know what a Moonwatch is. So I don't think that. You know, it's a different kind of audience, right? So,
but like, I guess, like, would it be safe to say that, you know, like, James Bond brought like these casual watch fans into the Omega fold, and then they, you know, maybe said, oh, you know what, they also made the Moonwatch.
I don't think so. I think it's complementary. I don't think they're, you know, I don't necessarily think they're dovetailing each other. And I also don't think that, you know, it's tough, Sanj. I don't know. You'd have to do some market research to really know what is the biggest seller for Omega. Is it the space program or is it James Bond?
I don't know. I mean, this is just my thoughts and not really question. Without it. Yeah.
Yeah. I also think that that's interesting. I wonder how long James Bond will stay an Omega person, right? I mean,
you're crossing your fingers and hoping that Seiko comes in.
Seiko has been there and has done that.
It has done that, but not, you know, as a multiple films or a...
Yes, it has.
I mean, like, not like the way Omega has done it.
Okay, well, I mean, to be fair, Sanj, when Rolex and James Bond were tied in back in that day, it wasn't an official, like, tie-in. It just happened to be the watch that James Bond was wearing was a Rolex.
Okay.
Just like when he was wearing a Seiko, it happened to be a Seiko. You know, it only became like a thing like later on where, you know, people noticed, oh, wow, he's wearing this specific model, whatever. And then at that time, Omega cashed in and said, hey, you know, James Bond has switched to Omega. So I'm just, you know, it's not like it was like there was like a, you know, I don't think Sean Connery was doing a Rolex marketing campaign during the release of Goldfinger or something. Like it's different back then. No,
but I guess what made the watches so cool in those films were because they were actually like a spy tool, right? Like they either...
True, yeah, yeah. But I just want to point out that it wasn't front of mind when
these
came out. Like now, everything he does is front of mind. He wears, you know, he uses a Sony Vaio computer. Sony's got a James Bond, you know, friggin' commercial about it. So like, it's not, you know, it's kind of a different environment.
Listen,
who would he go to? I mean, this is a weird side argument. Yeah, go on.
You want James Bond to wear a reissue of the 62 Moss. He'll be like jumping for joy.
I mean, you know, in theory, he could wear a Marine Master 300 and it wouldn't be out of place. I would just say that. All right. It's as tough as a Submariner or a Seamaster, you know. So there's no harm in that. But I can't think of a real brand that would replace Omega or Rolex for James Bond. I can't think of one.
Maybe I'd Bremont. Have to
think about that.
Bremont.
I could see Bremont do that. That would be interesting. Wow.
You know, British brand. I mean, pure.
Yeah. But it wouldn't be much of a secret intelligence secret, you know, if he was captured. I mean, you'd kind of figure out, okay, this is a British guy wearing a British watch. He's probably a British agent.
Well, I mean, you can tell it by the accent as well. Come on.
True.
All right. All right. On that bombshell, I mean.
All right. All right. Well, thanks again for joining us for another episode of the Land Jam podcast. Give us a follow on Twitter. Give us a follow on Instagram. Until next time. Thank you.